Good afternoon, everyone. I'm calling the meeting of the Senate Education Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is approximately 3:33 p.m. on Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016. And let the record show that we do have a quorum to do business. We have Senator Gardner with us, Senator Huggins, Senator Giesel, myself, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Stevens should be here shortly. He is currently conducting state business in another meeting. I'd like to remind everyone to turn off your cell phones, please. The purpose of our meeting today is to hear Senate Bill 174, Regulation of Firearms and Knives. Senator Kelly is prime sponsor and has been working with the university to incorporate some suggested changes. And my understanding is that we have a committee substitute for our consideration. Senator Huggins, could you please move the committee substitute?
I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 174.
And I'll object for discussion. Can you please have Senator Kelly and staff come up, state your name for the record, and speak to the committee substitute?
For the record, Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, Fairbanks, District A.
And for the record, Joe Burns, staff to Senator Pete Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, if it is all right with you, Mr. Burns can walk through the changes in the CS.
Yes. Senator Giesel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is the version that is the committee substitute?
November, right?
Okay. Just for clarification, I thought we had November at our last meeting. Am I in?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, was version H was the last version.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
So we are focused on version N. Thank you. Mr. Burns.
So the changes between version H to version N on page 2, lines 3 through 12, under that section of the bill, amends AS 1440-173, and then for subsection B, adds to the exceptions of how the Board of Regents may regulate the possession, ownership, use, carrying, registration, storage or transportation of concealed handguns or knives by incorporating the recommendations from the University of Alaska Board of Regents, and that's found in B2. And I believe we provide to the committee a document that has a summary of the changes, but that has B2, when the behavior of the student or an employee demonstrates the student or employee poses a risk of harm to self or others, that's lines 5 through 6. B3 is in student dormitories or other shared living quarters, which is line 7. B4, which is in university facilities where health services, counseling services, or other services related to sexual harassment or violence are provided, that's lines 8 through 9. B5 is in university facilities during adjudication of staff or student disciplinary issues, which is lines 10 through 11. And B6, which is in restricted access areas under C3, which is lines 12, which references lines 21 through 23. And this language is just incorporating the amendments from the requested amendments from the University of Alaska. The items on the document, University of Alaska concerns about SB 174, concealed carry on campus, items 1, 2, 4, and 5. And then the other changes made to the bill on page 2, lines 24 through 26, adds a subsection D that requires the university to establish a process to allow a person who is prevented from carrying a concealed handgun or knife under B2, which is lines 5 and 6, to regain the ability to carry a concealed handgun or knife on university property. And we felt this was an appropriate measure to ensure that the university does not have the power to indefinitely prevent a student or employee on campus from having a weapon without some sort of recourse. And then on page 3, we removed the transition language, giving the University Board of Regents 30 days following the effective date to implement conforming policies. And this section was not requested by the university. When we drafted the bill originally, our office felt it was a fair compromise to add. But upon reevaluation, we felt it was not necessary. The Alaska Constitution states that a law becomes effective 90 days after it is enacted, and unless the effective date is altered by 2/3 vote of each House, Section 3 would cause a 120-day delay between enactment and when conforming policies would have to be adopted by the region. So we didn't, since they didn't request it, we didn't feel it was necessary.
And that's it?
That would be all the changes.
Question. Does the language in this CS protect the rights of students, let's say in a classroom, a professor or someone that may not like the idea of a student possessing a firearm? Does it protect the student against dismissal from that class or otherwise their education disrupted as a result of this law being passed and their ability to carry a firearm?
Senator Dunleavy, the bill allows the University Board of Regents to enact policies if they wish that would restrict open carry. The bill as it is written would not allow the Board of Regents to restrict concealed handguns or knives unless it's in a manner identical with state law and the other sections which I just went over. So.
Questions for the sponsor? Seeing none, we're going to go to public testimony. First individual we have up is from the Department of Public Safety. I believe her name is Catherine Monfreda. Is that correct? Are you online?
This is Catherine Monfreda.
If you could please state your name for the record, who are you with? And I'm not sure exactly how many folks we're going to have today, but we're gonna keep folks to, we'll start off with 3 minutes, and if we have to, we'll whittle that down to two. But please begin your testimony.
For the record, my name is Catherine Monfreda. I'm with the Department of Public Safety in Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm really just here to answer questions if any were coming up regarding concealed handgun permit program.
Anyone have any questions? Senator Gardner?
Does the Anchorage Department of Public Safety have a position on this legislation?
We're neutral on this legislation.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for Ms. Monfreda? Thank you very much. Seeing none, we're going to go to Mike Hostina, UAF General Counsel. Mr. Hostina, are you online?
Yes, I am, Senator Dunleavy, but I'm here to answer questions. President Jim Johnson is available to make a statement regarding the changes in the CS, if you like.
So we have him down here in just a moment. So we'll go to President Johnson. President Johnson, please state your name for the record and if you can begin your testimony.
You bet. Thank you very much, Senator Dunleavy. We really appreciate the opportunity. Jim Johnson, President, University of Alaska. I want to begin by thanking Senator Kelly and members of the committee for considering the changes introduced with the committee substitute. As staff Joe Burns mentioned, the committee substitute does address four areas of significant concern to the university. Because he's done a good job of going through those, I won't repeat those at this point. But again, appreciation. These changes will allow the University Board of Regents to manage firearms in these common, high conflict, and high risk situations. So we appreciate that. That said, we still have a couple of significant areas of concern as well as a technical concern. One is programs for K-12 students. The committee substitute doesn't address concealed carry of handguns or knives in university facilities where K-12 programs are held, and we've got them all across the state in our community campuses, UAA, UAF, and UAS. As you know, if these programs, Rawhide, AMSEP, etc., were on K-12 grounds, it would be criminal offense to carry weapons in these areas. We ask that we be allowed to regulate consistent with existing law and avoid confusion and apply similar standards of care as existing law. It's not our intent to regulate outside of facilities where dedicated K-12 programs are occurring or at times when those programs are not there or not taking place. So we'd be happy to work with the sponsors and with the committee on a provision that's specifically and narrowly focused on this specific issue that we've raised here regarding K-12 students. The second area of concern is concealed carry with a permit. The committee substitute doesn't require a concealed handgun permit. Of course, as you know, Senator Coghill's bill back in 2014 did include that requirement. We feel that it made a lot of sense in conjunction with these other management tools that have been provided in the CS. In common areas, classrooms, labs, etc., we believe that a student or employee carrying concealed should have some training and should have some knowledge of gun safety and applicable law, and that the permit rules would exclude some people, certainly not all, with criminal histories from obtaining a permit. So the regents have expressed support for a permit requirement, has had several people testifying before the committee, and again, as indicated in the context of the K-12 issue, very happy to work with the committee on a focused amendment to address this concern. And then finally, more a technical issue, the language proposed as 1441.73b5 on page 2, line 10 of the CS, that applies to adjudication of student and employee discipline, emphasis on the word discipline, but does not include adjudication of disputes. And we adjudicate lots of different kinds of administrative disputes, grievances, administrative reviews, harassment, complaints, discrimination, lots of sorts of things that don't directly involve or necessarily involve discipline or dismissal from a program and a grade appeal. So although not disciplinary in nature, these disputes can be real. They can be volatile. And so again, we are very happy to work with the sponsor and the committee to try to very specifically and narrowly tailor an amendment that would address this specific concern. With that, thank you for considering the changes already made and for your hopeful willingness to work with us on these last couple of points. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, President Johnson. Any questions for President Johnson? Seeing none. We have Matt Cooper online, UAF Associate General Counsel. Mr. Cooper, I'm assuming you're there for questions. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator.
Any questions for Mr. Cooper? Seeing none, we're going to move to Brian Judy, National Rifle Association out of California. Mr. Judy, can you state your name for the record? Begin your testimony and figure about 3 minutes, please.
Sure, yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Judy. I'm the Alaska State Liaison for the National Rifle Association. I'm based out of our Western Regional Office in Sacramento. I cover four states, including Alaska. And on behalf of our Alaska NRA members, I'd like to urge support for Senate Bill 174. Should a person have less freedom and safety when he or she walks onto a college campus? If a person is trusted to own and carry firearms for self-defense outside college campuses, why should that person be disarmed and defenseless when he or she crosses the boundary and enters a college campus? Senate Bill 174 is about nothing more than erasing the arbitrary lines that require different standards on the alternative sides of those lines. Self-defense is a fundamental right. It's a natural right that existed prior to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. It's inherent. Every living being has the right to defend itself. The Second Amendment and Article 1, Section 19 of the Alaska Constitution don't grant the right. They recognize this fundamental pre-existing right. This bill is about law-abiding citizens being able to provide a means of self-protection on both sides of that arbitrary line. Some people say that protection should be left up to the professionals. There are at least two problems with this line of thinking. First, when seconds count, police are just minutes away. How many of the victims of the various mass shootings do you suppose have just called 911 from their cell phones? The second problem is that courts have ruled that police are not responsible for protection of the individuals, rather they're responsible for protecting society at large. Gun-free school zones have proven to be a public policy failure, if not a public policy disaster. Virtually every mass killing in recent years has occurred in a so-called gun-free zone. This comes as no surprise to those of us who support the individual right to keep their arms and the right of individuals to provide a means of personal defense. Criminals don't obey gun laws, including designated gun-free zones. It's astounding that there are many who still don't understand this simple truth. Gun-free zones will only be respected by law-abiding citizens. The reality is that designating an area as a so-called gun-free zone effectively creates not a gun-free zone, but rather a zone where only the potential victims are gun-free. There are currently 9 states that have passed this legislation that allow the possession and carrying of firearms by law-abiding citizens on college campuses, and there just haven't been any problems. In previous testimony, you've heard lots of dire predictions of tragedy. We've been hearing these warnings going back to 1994 when Alaska first passed its concealed weapon permit statute. We've heard it in every state where concealed weapon permits have been considered. We've heard it in every state where campus carry has been considered. You've also heard daunting fiscal warnings from the university. I would suggest that if there is the need to spend the money they're claiming to impose security, that security needs to be put in place now. This bill is not going to create problems. This bill is not going to increase the need for more security. If there, again, as I've indicated, there are people that are going to cause problems, it's going to be regardless of the fact that these are designated gun-free zones. So just in summary, I just want to urge your support on behalf of NRA members, again, for Senate Bill 174. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Judy. Any questions for Mr. Judy?
Yes.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Judy. Do you think that a citizen, or do you, maybe the NRA, think that a citizen should be disarmed on a commercial aircraft?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, when you enter a secure area of an airport and a plane, you have to go through a very rigorous control and a security checkpoint. And there's been discussion about certain areas on the university where there are sensitive things going on, where there will be secure areas created. So if you can prove, if the university, if the airports, if whoever wants to impose a gun-free area can assure that there aren't going to be bad guys with guns, like in airports and like is contemplated in the proposal here, then no, we don't object to that. But if you can assure that the bad guys aren't going to be withheld from an area, then law-abiding citizens should be able to provide a means of self-protection.
Any additional questions for Mr. Judy? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So I was going to ask you the same question about a courtroom, but I guess your answer about assuring no bad guys with guns there would hold true as well as for a commercial aircraft. What about a K-12 school? Because there's no way to assure that other people, parents even, aren't walking in with arms. Do you think that K-12 schools should be gun-free zones?
Well, you know, again, if you look at the last number of years, where have the mass killings taken place? Some have been on K-12 schools, some have been on college campuses, some have been other places, but they're always in an area that is purportedly a gun-free zone. So, again, if you want a gun-free zone, ensure it's going to be a gun-free zone. If you can't ensure that bad guys are going to be kept out, then you shouldn't be keeping good guys out. The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. So, you know, I understand that in the state of Alaska, K-12 schools are theoretically gun-free zones, but, you know, I hope that that you're not putting a lot of weight on that being the protection that's really needed.
Any additional questions for Mr. Judy? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and if you'd give me just a little bit of leave, this is slightly off topic but relevant in the sense that the NRA has taken a position about saying that guns aren't the problem, but that mental health is a way to kind of make sure that they're used more appropriately or people are screened in that sense.
Sure, we'll let the question go. Just hopefully it's not going to turn into a debate with the NEA. It's really the bill we're talking about here.
Right.
Okay.
Right. But it'll inform my comments at the end.
Okay. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So can you just speak a little bit about the NRA's position on mental health services for people who possibly shouldn't have carried arms?
Well, I suspect that the NRA's position is the same as your position and everybody else's position, and that is that people with identifiable mental health issues should be treated. They should get treatment.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any questions for Mr. Judy? Thank you, Mr. Judy. Next individual we have online is Hans Rodvik, representing himself from Anchorage. Hans, are you online?
Yes, can you hear me, Senator Don Levy?
Yes. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. And we're shooting for about 3 minutes.
Good afternoon, Senator Don Levy and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hans Rodvik, and I'm testifying on behalf of myself today. I'll be real brief in my testimony. I'm testifying in support of Senate Bill 174 by Senator Kelly. And just want to thank him for, in this time of a budget crisis, to not forget about the constitutional rights of law-abiding Alaskans. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and in 2015 I graduated from UAA. One day I may return to UAA to pursue a master's degree. During the 2014 legislative session, I had the distinct privilege to work as a legislative intern for Senator Coghill and helped lead the effort to allow law-abiding adults who are 21 years of age or older exercise their constitutional rights to carry concealed firearms on university campuses. What I'd like to do is just highlight the two reasons why I am supportive of Senate Bill 174. We're talking about the safety of students and law-abiding Alaskans who visit University of Alaska campuses, and we're also talking about constitutional rights when it comes to the issue of concealed carry. In 2007, at the University of Nevada, Reno, a student named by the name of Amanda Collins was raped within a few hundred feet of the campus police department. Her attacker was a serial rapist who then went on to rape and murder another woman before being brought to justice. At the time of the attack, Amanda Collins was a concealed weapons permit holder and was not allowed to carry that firearm on university grounds because of policies creating making that campus a gun-free zone. It's a similar situation we have at the University of Alaska. I'd like to highlight that in 2014, there were 35 registered sex offenders within a one-mile radius of the UAA campus. And when you expand that to a three-mile radius, there were over 790 registered sex offenders. On the constitutional grounds, you have Article 1, Section 19 of our state constitution, which guarantees the individual right to keep and bear arms. And that right cannot be infringed by the state or a political subdivision of the state. And in my opinion, the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska are a political subdivision of the state. They were created under Article 7, Section 3 of our state constitution, and are appointed by the governor and subject to a confirmation vote of the legislature. Unfortunately, they have violated state law and our state constitution through administrative policy, creating a gun-free zone across our campuses. And these gun-free zones, as history has proven in the last number of years, unfortunately, are areas where mentally deranged criminals target vulnerable populations. In my opinion, this should not be the case at our public universities in Alaska. Law-abiding citizens should not lose the fundamental right to protect themselves and others simply because they enter the grounds of UA campuses. I'll conclude by just encouraging you all to support Senate Bill 174, and I'm available for any questions if needed.
Any questions for Mr. Rodvik from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you. Next we have John Sonnen, I believe, in the room here in Juneau. Please come forward, state your name for the record. And again, we're going to try and keep it around 3 minutes, Mr. Sonnen. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Sonnen.
Sonnen.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. My name is John Sonnen, and I am a resident here in Juneau for the last 15 or so years. And I am shocked, to say the least. I heard one of the majority leaders say recently that you were going to do nothing but spend time on working on the budget. And why are we considering this bill? it unless maybe we think the manufacturers are a significant enterprise here in the state and would add to the economy by allowing more guns, and that's the issue I have. My friend from the NRA spoke earlier of the recent years and the actions. Well, that is more than likely due to being awash in handguns, military hardware, everything else in this country. And as soon as we let kids who are going to school to mature into civilization, so we all know that civilizing is a synergistic benefit. When we work together, we make more than when we work individually. Putting guns in anybody's hands is going to keep us believing that we have to work and do it ourselves. And, you know, I don't think that there's such thing as the good and bad guys. It's all relevant to the individual person. Everyone's unique. But if I'm going to be subjective about determining who's bad and who's good, I got to be the sheriff. And being the sheriff is why we are 200 years in the making here. We went through that phase. We don't need to go back to that dementia where everyone's got to bestow their own justice. You guys are in control of ours, and I think this bill has got to be the most inane and arcane proposal before my legislators, who I thought were going to be working only on the budget. I guess that's what I'd like to say. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Sonnen?
Thanks.
Seeing none, thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Next, we have Eugene Avery. Mr. Avery, you're in the room. I know. I see you. Please come forward, state your name for the record, who you may be affiliated with. Looks like it's yourself. And then if you can begin your testimony, we're going to shoot again for 3 minutes.
Eugene Avery, superintendent at Net Island School District. Within the last couple years, we had two incidents with weapons or similarities of weapons brought on campus. And I look at the individual child and the case that happened with each of them, and I just feel that at times there's a lot of other troubles in their lives that has led them down this path or made this inappropriate decision to bring those weapons on campus. And I would just say this, is that I don't know if it would be beneficial to allow teachers or anybody to bring weapons on campus and make quick decisions on whether to use them in an appropriate manner, for whatever the case may be. I know that some of our teachers would not want to be put into that position to make that decision, and we think it's best left up to the police force to deal with that. So I just wanted to tell you that and share with you that we've had some incidences down there, but we have found that when allowed to deal with them and get the right services for the children, that we've had better success with that instead of allowing a potential issue to develop if you had those kind of guns on campus. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Avery? Senator Gardner?
Thank you. Do I understand correctly that what you're concerned about is that had a faculty been armed, those children might have been shot?
Possibly.
By somebody making...
Yes, or have had to make a decision that maybe they're not fully qualified to make in a situation like that. Because just because you have a sidearm with you doesn't mean that you're going to make the perfect decision in that situation. And then that's another thing that I don't think our teachers need to worry about being trained to do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions for Mr. Avery? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next online, we have Mike Coons. Mr. Coons, can you identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony?
Yes, this is Mike Coons. I'm calling from Palmer. I'm speaking for myself. I sent a fairly extensive letter to the committee that you already have in your packet. What I would like to talk about is the two issues that were brought up by the president of the university. One was this issue of K-12 being the kids being in from K-12 being on the college campus, and that for somehow or another that creates its own problem because there's these children that are under 18 that may be taking courses at the campus. Those children are surrounded by their parents and other people on a day-to-day basis at Walmart, at Lowe's, at any number of places throughout the great state of Alaska that people are armed, and those children are not in any way, shape, or form put in danger. And in fact, the level of danger that we are placed in with those armed parents and armed people in the areas that they're at are now more secure in the event of a bad guy, as the head of the NRA pointed out. The only thing that stops a bad guy is a good with a gun is a good guy with a gun. So that's not an issue to me. The other issue that he brought up was that he would love to see the concealed carry permit. And he pointed out that Senator Coghill had that in the previous bill last year. That was not in the previous bill last year until the president of the university was digging his heels in and saying he wasn't going to allow it. So then Senator Coghill, as a compromise, did that without, and the president of the university at that time said, I never asked for that compromise, and it still wasn't good enough for him. The issue with the requiring a concealed carry permit to come onto campus puts that it's the same situation we are right now. The students are second-class citizens. Right now, they're third-class citizens because they're completely disarmed. But under this last state law with constitutional carry, we do not need a concealed carry permit to carry concealed. So then turning around and saying, well, because you're going to come across that arbitrary line, you have to go through the permitting process, which means then that you have to go and spend some money, get your fingerprints done, get an NCIS background check, and now you're good to go. It doesn't really make any difference even on the additional classes, and the classes are concealed carry classes. Talk about the law, situational awareness, things that we have to do that are under statute. Any other additional training, and I'll leave you with this, all training that we receive outside concealed carry are training that we go to other classes, we spend a lot of money, we spend a lot of ammo on, and we make sure that we know how to tactically handle our situation. So I would oppose those two aspects, and any questions, I would gladly answer them.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Coons or members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Coons. Mr. Coons was the last on the list. Is there anyone else in the room that has not signed up that feels they need to testify at this time? Seeing none, we're going to close public testimony. Let's see here. Brief at ease. Very brief. So, with the close of public testimony, are there any amendments for the CS?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gardner.
I move amendment number one.
I object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. Amendment number one addresses one of the issues that Mr. Coons just spoke about and also that President Johnson spoke of, and that is it would require somebody who wants to carry. The language is more specific, possess, own, use, carry, register, store, or transport concealed handgun to have a permit. And as the president said, it would assure that student or employee who has a weapon on campus would have a certain level of training, knowledge of gun safety, and applicable law. And it was, as previously mentioned, incorporated into the Senate Bill 176 in the previous legislature.
Any questions from members of the committee to Senator Gardner regarding the amendment? Seeing none, I maintain the objection, so we'll do a voice vote, please.
No.
Senator Giesel?
No.
Senator Gardner?
Yes.
Senator Stevens is absent. Chair Dunleavy?
No. The motion fails. Is there another amendment or any additional amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I move amendment number 2.
I object for purposes of discussion. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. This, again, was the fifth of four changes that the university requested on the day that we opened testimony on this bill and introduced it. And I'll use the words of President Johnson. Then again, he said it would allow the university to regulate gun carry as the same as K-12 with existing standards for care of K-12 on campus. So university facilities where there are preschool, elementary, junior high, or secondary schools would be regulated the same as K-12, no open carry.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Gardner on amendment number 2? Seeing none, can we do a voice vote?
Senator Gardner?
Yes.
Senator Huggins?
No.
Senator
Giesel?
No.
Senator Stevens is absent. Chair Dunleavy?
No. Motion fails. Are there any additional amendments?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Gardner?
I'd like to move a conceptual amendment, call it amendment number 3, and that is page 2, line 11, after disciplinary issues, include the words or disputes. And again, this is something that was discussed, I believe, yes, by Senator Johnson, President Johnson, and the whole line would read, in university facilities during adjudication of staff or student disciplinary issues or disputes.
And this is on page?
2, it would be on line 11.
Any questions for I object for purposes of discussion. This would be Amendment 3, proposed Amendment 3. Are there any questions for Senator Gardner? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the spirit of the amendment. You know, this is constitutional rights, and, you know, for us to look at something conceptually here today, I would be willing to, along with Senator Gardner, to make sure that the next committee of referral had an opportunity. I'm not saying I support it because I haven't seen what it says, but that they get a look at it, but so that the bill can move, assuming it moves out of committee here today. But I'm not really interested in conceptual amendments when it comes to constitutional rights.
Thank you. Additional questions for Senator Gardner? Just a question I would have, it's I guess more rhetorical. I tend to agree with Senator Huggins on this particular issue because I think we need to define dispute. How is that defined? And I think as it goes to the next committee of referral, it gives us time to have that discussion with the university folks and legal folks as well. How do you define a dispute? Who defines that dispute? How is that dispute resolved? And does that dispute rise to the level of to some extent leaving your constitutional amendment at the door of that particular venue for that dispute. So although I think it's certainly worthy for further discussion, we have another committee referral, I think it needs to be more fleshed out as to what that really means and to what extent. Seeing no additional questions, can we have a voice vote, please, on amendment number 3?
Senator Gardner?
Yes.
Senator Giesel?
No.
Senator Huggins?
No.
Senator Stevens?
No. So amendment number 3 fails. Are there any additional amendments? Again, this is going to another committee referral where I think there'll be some more vetting and discussion regarding this CS. So seeing none, is there an objection to moving this bill out of committee? Is there a motion to move this? I should ask, is there a motion to move the bill out of committee?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move that CS for Senate Bill number 174, version November, be moved from committee with individual comments.
Any objections?
Yes, I object.
We do a voice vote.
Senator Giesel?
May I speak to my objection, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator, excuse me, Senator.
Yeah, thank you, and I'm not looking to do a great speech on this issue. I suspect that time will come. But I just want to say that I understand that for some people this is a black and white issue, that the Second Amendment has guarantees, and for others that's understood to be as part of a militia. And I understand that there's no negotiation in some ways. But at the same time, we accept as citizens that while we have rights, they have there are compromises with common sense and the reality of how we go about our lives in a host of ways. And so we accept this on airplanes. We accept it in psychiatric wards and courtrooms and preschools and elementary schools. And I believe that it should also be the same for universities where there are lots of young people. They are unformed in many ways. It's part of the beauty of youth, but it also increases risk behavior and poor impulsivity and sometimes poor judgment and sometimes great judgment. But they're still unformed in many regards, and they're in new environments with lots of adjustments and challenges. And I just think it's appropriate, and I don't believe that having everybody armed actually makes people safer. We've had testimony about rape victims who said if their assailant had been armed, they would have been killed. We heard about one woman who had a knife to defend herself. He took it away and cut up her face. You know, these things do happen. It doesn't always make you safer. I asked if both the assailant and the victim are armed, who's safer, and the answer, the testimony was the person who has the most training, but we're not requiring that people have training. I mean, they may or they may not. It's a random thing. Some will, undoubtedly, and some will be novices and use their poor judgment. So I think this is dangerous, and I'm going to vote against the bill.
Thank you. Any other committee members wish to speak on this issue? Yeah. Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't universally accept that I accept being unarmed on an airplane. Quite frankly, it makes me internally pretty angry. You know, I don't carry guns on airplanes. But, you know, that notion that, a pilot can carry a gun, as I recall. Sky Marshals can carry guns. I once upon a time, I wore a camouflage uniform, said U.S. Army on it. Did lots of trigger time. And for me to go through to get patted down, I don't accept that. So I'm sorry. I mean, to say we accept it, I don't accept that, number one. Number two, it was interesting to me over the holidays. I've been down in the lower 48. And some of my friends' daughters were present. They all carried a purse. And you know what was inside that purse? It was a gun. Because they were concerned about their personal safety. My daughter, when she moved away from the home, said, Dad, I need a gun. I need two of them. One to sit by my bed and one for me to carry. I rest my case.
Thank you. Any additional comments from members of the committee? I'll briefly chime in. I appreciate the discussion. It's a discussion that's gone on for some time. I mean, decades and decades and decades, and will continue to do so. Slight difference with the airplanes are you're talking about a public institution that's taking public money, and it's you know, this certainly doesn't reach, for example, APU. We have we're not going to have any jurisdiction over APU. But some of the airlines, and many of the airlines, are private industry too. And they kind of set their own rules. And there'll be folks that have restaurants established and so forth in the state of Alaska that will say we don't allow guns in our establishments. With regard to the students being children, I might be wrong, but most students at some of our universities in Alaska are actually adults. Some of them are well in their 30s, 40s, 50s. I'll continue to take courses there. Don't necessarily consider myself a child, although that would be a compliment, I guess. For a lot of us, it does come down to a rights issue, and a lot of people poo-hoo that. A lot of us are concerned that our rights are being eroded, and that's a concern. One of the things that's really not, hasn't been touched on for me is, as a father of three daughters, I was kind of joking around with the sponsor the other day, and I said, you know, I wouldn't mind an amendment that says only women can carry guns, because the research shows that your mass killings, I can't recall a woman being part of a mass killing. In other words, initiating a mass killing, except for what just occurred in San Bernardino, and that was some believe it was a result of a religious extremist issue there. But I have a daughter on campus. And I applaud the folks at the university for what they do. They do their best with security. They do their best to try and maintain a safe environment. But you have a campus, for example, the University of Anchorage and Fairbanks. It's not a consolidated campus. You can't put it behind a fence. It's spread throughout the city. And I've visited my daughter on campus, and it can be dark in the winter. It can be you're crossing. You're going from building to building, oftentimes through well-treated areas, dark areas. There's no prohibition in some of these campuses that are open campuses spread throughout a city where you have folks that are not students that are walking on those campuses, infiltrating those campuses, being part of the campus. And I think it's a difficult situation for some folks beyond the Second Amendment, but just for protection. And in a discussion with one student, you know, they said, I have to look out the door, and wherever I go, especially when it's dark, I'm worried about that. And if I try and protect myself, I have to be worried about a professor or an official from the university as well finding that weapon. And I asked that individual, I said, do people carry guns on campus? They said, of course they do. They carry guns everywhere. And I asked the individual, why don't you carry a gun? They said, I'm not supposed to. So it's kind of a tricky situation for folks. And this was a woman. And we haven't even gotten into the discussion with the university, and sometime down the road I think we will, but there were issues brought up about alcohol. And there's no doubt that alcohol is an issue on all campuses. I don't know how you address that issue, and I'm sure it certainly makes behavior worse for some folks, but because we can't control the alcohol issue, I'm not sure if we should be compensating by trying to curtail Second Amendment rights or the ability for individuals who are not very strong or not very fast. I had a discussion with a senator about a relative of mine that had to employ sprinting skills across campus recently because an individual, a male, was pursuing that woman. People shouldn't have to run and hide and look around and be worried and concerned. As a matter of fact, as a result of that incident, the grades of that individual suffered. So it's a difficult situation, but for me, it's I'm going to side on the side of the Second Amendment. I'm going to think through the gun shows I've gone to countlessly and endlessly in the Mat-Su that are actually in schools in which there's been no shootings. I just came back from Utah, where the University of Utah has had the same type of law for many years. Will there be accidents? I'm sure there will be. Will a lot of individuals, especially those that may not be robust, may not be fast, will they feel better if they feel like they have an opportunity to protect themselves as they're going to their car in the middle of the wintertime? Probably. And will those individuals that may want to attack those people, will those individuals, oftentimes, unfortunately, men that want to cause harm to people, oftentimes women, will they think twice that if they do that, there's somebody that may have something to protect themselves with? So, again, this has more vetting to do. It's going to go to the next committee referral. Some of the issues on the Third Amendment, for example, dispute how you define that will come up, and then hopefully that issue will be defined more clearly. But long and short of for me is I'm glad Senator Kelly brought this bill forward. And with that, can we do a voice vote?
This is on moving the bill from committee, right? Yes.
Senator Giesel?
Yes.
Senator Gardner?
No.
Senator Stevens is absent. Chair Dunleavy?
Yes. So with that, SB 174 has a referral to the next committee, and that is Senate Judiciary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And with that, we will adjourn and sign out.